Torres?
May it please the court. The issue before the court in this expedited case is whether the district court erred in enhancing Mr. Torres' sentence based on reckless endangerment, that is, recklessly disregarding a substantial risk of serious bodily injury or death in transporting aliens. On February 23, 2009, Mr. Torres transported a family of four aliens in the sleeper compartment of a tractor trailer. There was a woman and her brother-in-law beside a mattress between it and the back of the sleeper compartment. There was the woman's 12-year-old daughter, who was in a closet without a door, and her 8-year-old daughter, who was hiding under the bed of the sleeper compartment. And that area was 15 inches high, 15 inches deep, and 36 inches long, approximately. And it was the transportation of the girl under the bed that the PSR relied upon for the enhancement. If I could briefly address the standard of review for a moment. I noted that in a case like this where the material facts are undisputed, the application of the law to those facts is reviewed de novo. The court said this in Solis Garcia, which was authored by Judge Jolly with Judge Dennis on the panel, and that same message was sent in Rodriguez Mesa at footnote 9. So rather than a clear error standard of review advocated by the government, I would argue that the standard of review in this case should be de novo. Turning to the substantive issues in the case, this court has held in Solis Garcia that the transportation of aliens without seat belts does not in and of itself constitute reckless endangerment. In order to be reckless endangerment, there has to be additional aggravating factors to warrant the enhancement. And there are not sufficient aggravating factors in this case. The district court focused a lot on the fact that this was a child, but the guidelines already account for the dangers involved in transporting an unaccompanied minor at 2L1.1B4. Reckless endangerment doesn't depend on the fact that it was a child being transported, particularly here, where the child had three family members in addition to the driver who could help her get out if need be. She was also in an area where it is not surprising to find people. People are often in the sleeper compartment, while not necessarily under the bed. It would be an area that rescue workers would be looking for.
When you say that the guidelines already account for minors, do you not still have to account for the fact physical characteristics of a minor, for example, who is put in a compartment underneath a bed of this size, the physical capabilities of a minor to extricate herself from that area?
Certainly, Your Honor.
I mean, you can't ignore her capabilities and her physical dimensions when you're considering whether or not it was dangerous to have her in that position.
Certainly not, Your Honor. But I think that those facts actually weigh in my favor because she is much smaller than an adult, where it might have been reckless to place an adult or try to place an adult in that space. Someone who is 51 inches high and 80 pounds, it would not be the kind of jammed, cramped position that would be unsafe for an adult. Perhaps the fact that is maybe most helpful to the court, the district court was concerned that she would not get out on her own or could not get out on her own. But the facts established by the agents were that she did get out on her own after a moment or two by herself without any aid whatsoever.
But isn't the test whether the person could escape the vehicle after an accident, not when you're stopped at a stop sign?
And you have to be able to extricate yourself. Obviously, there's some accidents where it doesn't matter what size you are, you're not going to be able to extricate yourself. But because she is small, she can move around more easily in a small area than could an adult. And there's nothing, there was just a vinyl curtain covering one side. It wasn't a solid metal box the way the district court said that it was. So all she would have to do is roll right out, and she would be in the same position as her mother and her uncle. There's not a significant impediment. The idea with reckless endangerment is not just the sort of base level danger involved with concealment. It's got to be something a little bit more. And it can't just be the fact that she's a child and that's not how we should treat children. Obviously, that's the case. There has to be something more. And there's not enough difference in this case between the facts here and the facts in Solis Garcia to show that something more.
Solis Garcia states that being unrestrained alone is not enough. There has to be an aggregating factor. And then there are a number of cases after that where the court has pretty easily found an aggravating factor, one of which is U.S. versus Mitchell, where the aliens were found in a compartment in the tractor trailer. Can you distinguish Mitchell from this case?
If I could, I would like to wait until rebuttal to do that, Your Honor, because I need to take a second look at it to do it effectively. But I think that the space involved is different. I can easily distinguish Smith, which is an unpublished case, which both I and the government cited. In Smith, there was an actual closed compartment, and several of the cases following Solis Garcia are closed compartments, and that is different from here, where we have something that is open on one side with just a vinyl covering, preventing any sort of escape. The other distinguishing case that can be easily distinguished is Zuniga Mezquita, which involved, in addition to having a lot of stuff crammed in with the aliens that would prevent them from getting out, all those things could operate as projectiles in the event of an accident, and that's obviously not the case here. So in looking at all the cases that came before this case, after Solis Garcia, they seem to be cases involving either a completely enclosed space, such that the alien doesn't have access to oxygen the way he should, or the position is such that there is something preventing ready escape. And this case doesn't really have either of those factors. The court has nothing further.
I know the district court adopted the pre-sentence report as its findings of fact, and what we have, at least I have before me now, indicates that he asked some questions and heard testimony. But was there a finding with respect to the position of the drivers and passenger seats and how they would impede somebody's ability to escape the vehicle?
No, Your Honor, there were no specific findings in that regard. The judge did ask some questions, and there was testimony that if anybody, were to come from the sleeper compartment through the driver's side, there's a spring-loaded seat that is a little bit difficult to navigate. There's no testimony that anything like that existed for the passenger seat. So the sleeper compartment is just inches away from those seats, and it would be relatively easy for someone to come down and slide right out the way they would.
But there was no finding by the trial court?
No. Actually, the district court didn't make any findings beyond adopting the PSR. My characterization of the court's concerns is derived entirely from the questions the court asked of the agents.
Okay, Ms. Lindell, thank you very much. You've saved some time for rebuttal, and we'll hear from you, Ms. Wilson.
May it please the court. The reckless endangerment enhancement in this particular case was warranted. This court has been very clear that the enhancement applies to a wide variety of contact. No single bright-line test is in order. Instead, this court has taken a case-by-case inquiry and applied them to the particular facts of each case. This court has said on more than one occasion that even one Zuniga factor may suffice, as well as additional factors and even new factors. In this case, the district court heard testimony from two particular agents, as well as saw pictures of the cab, the people, and the spaces where they were hiding before the court applied the enhancement. And just to clarify, the reason that the government stated that the standard of review on it was de novo in relation to the facts is because in the opening brief, they explained that the little girl was crying because her mother and her uncle had disembarked from the cab, and she was crying in relation to that. However, the testimony was that when the agents entered the truck that they heard a little girl crying. They found the mother and the uncle under the bed. And while Mr. Torres' counsel is correct that that's what the PSR said, the agent specifically testified that the little girl was crying in the cramped container, and her mother and the uncle were under the blankets.
And what does that have to do with the case?
Well, that's why I said that it was a clear error standard, because there could be an issue as to...
Why does it matter why the child was crying if she was just crying and you don't know why she was crying?
Well, I think that it serves a significant purpose here, because the girl was saying in Spanish that she wanted to come out, and that goes to whether or not she could extricate herself in an emergency. It's obvious that somebody had told her she needed to hide in there. That was Torres, of course. There's no dispute about that. And someone had told her that she could not leave that space. So she was crying to come out, and that ties into, if there had been an emergency, would that little girl have had the judgment, the strength, et cetera, to get out of that compartment?
Well, I thought the testimony was, and I thought the district court found, I mean, that she was not individually cramped in that particular space herself.
There was not a particular discussion about whether or not she was cramped. What was stated was the dimensions, and the dimensions were that it was 15 inches deep and 15 inches high and 36 inches wide, and she was 51 inches tall. So obviously she had to be, curled up in there to some extent, and the exhibits would show you that as well, because as Agent Rowley testified, he could only get his 32-inch leg in there and a little bit more. That's it. So adult could never fit in there.
In other words, reckless endangerment means that there was a danger to her injury or her life, correct?
That's correct.
That is greater than any other circumstance.
Absolutely.
Now, as I understand it, she was in the back. Were there any seats in the back seat there?
It was folded down, so the bed was on top of her, which would have meant that in an accident, that bed could have collapsed on her.
Okay. Now, but there was a seat back there.
No.
Was there a seat back there? If you said it was folded down, what do you mean was folded down?
Well,
the seat was folded down?
Yes, it becomes a bed.
But there's a seat back there.
No, the pictures do not show a seat. They showed a folded down bed with a metal compartment and a vinyl covering in the front of it.
But was there a seat? I thought you just said that the seat was folded down to make a bed. Is that what you said?
Appears that there's some type of bed that folds down.
I see.
If you look at the pictures, it was, I would say in our lingo, it's akin to a Murphy bed. But I'm just guessing because I see the pictures. What I see in the pictures is it's a folded down bed on top of this little girl. Maybe it's folded down.
Is the primary bed behind the cab, behind the driver's seat, is that where the parents were or her mother was?
Yes, it looks, from what I can tell from the pictures, the seats are here, and right behind it, with a little bit of space, is the bed. And the little girl is in the compartment underneath the bed, which
it's
is
like
metal.
It's like a trundle bed. Is that what you're saying? A bed beneath the
I
bed?
I think a trundle bed pulls out, and this, I can see some seat buckles.
Is it a bed beneath the bed, is what you're saying?
No, it's a metal compartment.
A metal compartment.
Here's the bed, and then there's a space that's 35 inches wide.
It doesn't have a door on it?
Absolutely not. It's only 15 inches high. Okay. So she would have had to have been tucked in under there, and as the testimony showed during the sentence.
How does that put her in any greater danger than, say, someone that was sitting in the back seat of a cab?
Well, for one thing.
In other words, the district court said that the primary, as I understood it, the primary endangerment here was that she could not get out of that cab in case of an accident.
The district court was concerned about several things. The court said right out of the box that tell me why it's not reckless endangerment to put a juvenile in a metal container. And opposing counsel said I must walk softly. But what the situation here is the girl is on the floor. There's a bed on top of her. There was testimony that there's limited ability to...
Was there any indication that the bed on top of her was weak in any way or that it... Is there anything in the record that indicates that that was a potential danger?
There's nothing in the record. However, this court recently in Garza talked about the danger where there were two adults underneath a child. And of course, to that extent, in this case, we have a child underneath two adults. We have the flip situation. Now, I understand in Garza, the men, the adults, were placed in a different position. But this was a little girl. She only weighed possibly 80 pounds. She could have become a projectile. And her field of movement was restricted.
We've specifically held that riding in the cargo is not, you know, lying or in riding in the cargo without seat belts, without any protection, is not endangering the passengers in that car.
That's right. That in Solis Garcia, that is the minimum threshold. But the court also
right,
talks about the ordinance.
In this case, she was not oxygen deprived in any way.
No, and neither were the
Nobody
people in Garza.
Nobody contends that this was a wedge case.
Pardon me?
Nobody contends that this was a wedge
case.
Well,
she was
wedged in.
She was in a cramped space.
Well, in a cramped, but she was not wedged in. I mean, there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that the temperature was hot or unreasonably cold.
Nor was there
a guard. She had full communication with the driver and with her parents. And she would have had no more difficulty getting out of that cab than any backseat passenger would have had. And I don't understand how that is reckless endangerment, frankly.
Well, Your Honor, I think the fact is she's 8 years old, and these standards often impute an ordinary passenger being...
Does that mean that you can't put any 8-year-old in the back seat of a car?
But she wasn't in the back seat. She's on a floor in a metal compartment all tucked in with a bed on her,
well,
with two adults
that
on...
That may be even safer.
Being on the floor unrestrained?
Well, and then in a seat unrestrained.
She's not in a seat. She's
I understand that. I'm
she's on the floor.
How this is a greater reckless endangerment.
But I think these courts, cases often speak to the ordinary passenger. And a child is not an ordinary passenger. If this court looks at
but we have a special rule then for children and that children are automatically endangered, whatever the situation
not
is?
Whatever the situation is, but as this court has said repeatedly, and it should look at case-by-case situation. In this particular case, we have an 8-year-old girl. We know she's not willing to come out on her own because we hear her. We know that she was crying and needed permission. She came out only when the agent told her to do so. And I don't think it's correct that we can assume that an 8-year-old child would communicate with a driver and know what to do.
Well, that's not the question about whether that individual might. We could speculate whether she would or would not communicate. But she clearly could communicate. They were hearing her crying.
But this case is more akin to Villagran, where people were under the bunk of a sleeping compartment and reckless endangerment was applied. Likewise in Smith, where three aliens were under the bed. Renteria, where another alien was under the bed of a sleeping compartment. So, Your Honor, we would contend that definitely a little girl traveling in a cramped container under a bed hardly qualifies as an ordinary passenger without a seatbelt. A child does not have the judgment,
okay,
the maturity, or
the
strength. Excuse me?
What was the danger? What was the specific danger that was enhanced by her being there instead of in, say, the bed up above or in a seat without a seat belt? What was the...
Well, in a seat, people are upright. She's lying in a cramped position. She doesn't weigh that much. In an accident, she could go flying.
Well, if you don't have a seat belt on, you really could go flying if you're sitting up. If she's on the floor in a metal container that doesn't have any doors on it, that's not depriving her of any oxygen, she may even be safer, it seems to me. I mean, it just seems like that your argument is... not convincing.
Well, in several of these cases, including Garza, there was no issue regarding oxygen or temperature or others, and this court still found reckless endangerment. And as I said before, in Garza, we had a child on top of two adults. Here, we have two adults on top of a child. And if that bed had collapsed, opposing counsel makes the argument, well, her mother could have taken care of her. But how do we know that? We also...
not indicated that there was any possibility that would have collapsed. I mean, that it was strong. I mean, it was...
It's not a regular bed. It's a pull-down bed with two adults.
But, I mean, there's nothing in the record that indicates that in itself was an endangerment, that the bed itself, because it was under another bed, was a reckless endangerment.
Well, this court previously has found that aliens under the bed did suffice for reckless endangerment. The only time, I believe, that you're often going to have some of those Zuniga factors, which of course are unnecessary regarding oxygen or whatnot, is maybe if they're in the tractor or there's some other reason. But many of the court's cases are where the aliens are actually in the driving part of the cab or the driving part of the truck. And so
she was not separated from her. I mean, her mother and uncle were in the same area that she was. I mean,
they were on top of her.
They were on top.
That's correct. But the cab wasn't designated for traveling in a closet or in this metal compartment on the floor. And they had already traveled approximately, I think it was 70-something miles, and they had 292 miles to go. She'd already been lying there in this cramped position for the 70-something miles. And if there had been an accident, the agent Rowley was very clear that it would have been difficult for her to exit the vehicle because you have the spring seat, you have the other big seat, you have the stick shift, and then, of course, you have the heavy doors.
How would that have been more difficult for her to extricate herself from that vehicle than a passenger that might be riding in the back seat, assuming there was a back seat there? Anybody in behind, under any conditions, would have had the same difficulty getting out of the truck that she would have had.
Except she's 8 years old. And Judge Jack was sensitive to that issue as well, that because it's very difficult to compare or to impute the same abilities and capabilities to an adult as to a young child.
Would it have been reckless endangerment under any circumstances to have her behind the front two seats? And you're saying that the only way they could have avoided this extra enhancement is to let her ride in the front seat?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Well, then where would you have put her that would have made her safer than she was?
Well, by nature, smugglers are hidden. So perhaps I don't even think children in Texas are allowed at her weight to ride in the front seat. So presumably, if there had been a back seat and if she had been secured, which would be the law in Texas, then she could be okay, presumably.
Except we've heard you don't have to be secure, that the lack of security does not constitute reckless endangerment.
Yes, but that's typically where something is for hire. And this, of course, is an illegal act. And in those cases where somebody is for hire, the people are in regular seats.
You're attaching all kind of barnacles to this law that's not been put there yet.
Well, but when you're transporting somebody with a commercial license, typically you're using it legally, and you're in a situation in a bus or what have you where you're sitting there in a designated seat as opposed to a floorboard in a cramped space and two adults on top of you.
Okay. Ms. Wilson, it seems to me that both of you have drawn some conclusions based on the questions that the district court asked. But what we do know is that the district court adopted the pre-sentence report.
That's correct.
The pre-sentence report, as I read it, it makes reference to Application Note 5, which references whether the person's put in a crowded condition, and then it concludes with the dimensions of this metal box. It seems to me that in adopting that, the court is suggesting that placing this particular child in a box of that dimension creates a risk of death or serious bodily injury.
Absolutely, and that's clear from the court.
In other words, it's a crowding issue. Is that a fair reading of the PSR?
The court does state that, but there is very little testimony about that at the trial. I mean, excuse me, during the sentencing. It's more about the cramped condition. So in that sense, that's overcrowding.
I didn't mean crowding in the sense of the number of people in the cab. I mean that it was a crowded. She was jammed in there.
Absolutely. That's what I told Judge Jolly, is that she's 51 inches and it's only 15 inches high and 36 inches. There's nothing in the record how long it took her to come out, but we do know that she was crying to come out and did not until Agent Mosley or Morales told her to come out.
And I think he testified she had no trouble coming out when he told her to.
So, in any event, Your Honors, we believe that there are explicit facts to support the district court's finding of reckless endangerment. And the standard is preponderance of the evidence, and we believe that's been satisfied, and this court should affirm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for a good argument, Ms. Wilson. Ms. Landau?
With respect to the factual disputes, I submit that the difference between the girl crying before her parents, her mother and her uncle left the cabin, or during their departure is not material. So to the extent that that's considered a disputed fact, I don't dispute it. The de novo standard of review should apply because there are no disputed material facts. I have to confess, I'm not sure what counsel for the government is referring to about a Murphy bed and collapse and things of that nature. I don't recall, and I didn't see any testimony about the possibility of a bed collapsing on the girl under the bed. I'm looking at Government Exhibit 7, which is a photograph of the space, and there's a mattress, and below it there's the vinyl curtain, and I don't see any other bed that was, if there was a bed that was tucked up, there was no discussion of it. So to the extent that that argument is being advanced, I'm not sure it's supported by the record.
So she was, you think she was on the floor?
She was on the floor under the bed.
And the bed was supported by a metal,
looks like
frame?
Correct.
There was no evidence that it was unstable or weak in any way?
There was no evidence to that effect, Your Honor. And in terms of where her mother and her uncle were during the transport, counsel for the government says that they were on top of her. And I don't, the PSR, which the district court adopted, didn't say that. The PSR says that the mother and the uncle were actually between a mattress and the back of the compartment, not on top of the structure that the little girl was under. I'm not sure that really makes a difference in any case, but I believe that's what the record indicates.
Saying the box wasn't deep enough to be under the location of the adults.
I think they're behind it.
Right. She's on the front.
Right.
And they're behind.
Correct. And in terms of how crowded or how much space the girl had, she's 51 inches high. The compartment is 36 inches long, so that means that she's a little bit over 4 feet, and she would have had to kind of scrunch down a little over a foot to make herself fit, which isn't really all that much in the grand scheme of things. I tried it myself. It was really not that bad. And I crawled under my own bed.
You got
bed.
In the little box yourself?
I'd have a bed which has a metal frame, and I crawled
not
under it.
Not the same box?
Not the same at all. And we were not going 75 miles an hour or anything like that. But I, in order for me to come here and say this, I felt like I had to kind of try it out myself, so I did. And it's not great, but it's not that bad. And I am.
All of that's in the record.
Well, not exactly, Your Honor.
We won't ask any questions about your height and weight. And
suffice it to say, I'm closer to the size of the agent than I am the little girl. But to the extent that the mattress is a factor, in the McKinley case, this court held that being concealed under a mattress is not reckless endangerment in a sleeper compartment. And to distinguish the Garza case, because the record is not at all indicating that there were two adults on top of the little girl, Garza really is not applicable here. There you have the wedging under seats and under floorboards, plus the added difficulty of a child blocking the way to some extent by sitting on the seat that the aliens would have to get around. And the court found that that factor was very important, and it's not present here. So Garza does not really give the court much guidance in how to address the facts of this case.
I thought one of the concerns about Garza is that you had these two aliens, and they were adults, but that they were sort of jammed in underneath the seat.
Correct.
The child on top may have just been an extra aggravating factor.
It may be an extra aggravating factor, but in reading the case, it seemed to me that that really was significant for the court. And there, we don't have dimensions about how much space there is between the floorboard and the seat in that particular pickup truck, but those were not children, small people. They were adults, and there really wasn't enough space for them to be there with or without that child. With respect to the Smith case, which the government cited, Smith involved a closed compartment. You can't tell from reading the case, but if you go back and read the briefing in the case, the sealed compartment would have prevented airflow as well as made it difficult for the alien to get out. So it's really not useful here. And in the Renteria case, there were also aliens very squashed in closets, and the conclusion that there was reckless endangerment was not necessarily based on the fact that someone was hiding under the bed. I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Landauer.
Thank you.
You both have been helpful to the court in your arguments. The court will take about a